The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers. Taking your calls and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome to the show. It's me, Matt Slick, and listen to Matt Slick Live. If you want to give me a call, five open lines, 877-207-2276. And last four digits of your, let's see, CARM, because, you know, it's Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, you know, carm.org. That's the website, and you can check it out there if you want. Just go to carm.org. People are asking me, hey, did I paint? And I'll talk about that in a second. Let's see, if you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. No, I did not paint. Now, for those who don't know what that means, you can actually watch me do the show in a studio. Actually, it's an office. And yesterday I put some soundproofing up, and it turns out that they, you know, have all this. It was a nice little color, so I put it up just as a background, so that it makes me pop out a little bit nicer. I hope. Of course, I need all the help I can get. As my friends tell me, man, you got a face for radio. So that's always really good. So you guys can tell me if you like the new look, lighting, and the background. You can just tell me if you like it or not. All right. Hey, folks, look, four open lines. Why don't you give me a call? 877-207-2276. Yesterday, we had on Eric Johnson from the Mormonism Research Ministry, and we talked about his book, Introducing Christianity to Mormons, which you can get on Amazon and ChristianBooks.com. And I do recommend you go check it out. I've known Eric for, I don't know, 30 years, and he's a godly man, has a great wife, and Terry, hey, if Terry, if you're listening, I'm waving, and he's an expert on Mormonism, so he knows so much. These are the guys, he and Bill McKeever, I call up and ask questions when I have issues I need to get to. So if you want to give me a call, four open lines, 877-207-2276. I want to hear from you. So why don't we just jump right on and just get to Chuck from North Carolina. Tom. Hey, Chuck. Chuck, welcome, buddy. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Good. Thank you, Matt. Matt, you know, Psalm 11:3, I guess it is, if the foundations are destroyed, what shall the righteous do? I believe that's the verse.
Wait, I'm not following you. I'm not following you. I couldn't quite understand you. What? The what?
Psalm 11, chapter 11, verse 3, I believe it's, if the foundations are destroyed, what shall the righteous do?
Yeah, that applies to today. Uh-huh.
Yeah, applying today, and it even applies to the lost in a way. When we had our Christian foundations of our society, mm-hmm. everybody had a foundation to live upon, you
yep.
know, to guide mm-hmm. them generally. And
no, we don't.
No, we mm-hmm. don't. And it caught me the quote that Francis Schaeffer, I think, said. We'll be floating in the air.
Right.
We don't have anything.
There's a phrase in the Psalm, I think it's Judges, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And what follows that is the destruction of the nation of Israel and then oppression from an outside ruler. That's what happens. So that's what's happening here. And when you're talking, you reminded me, because I go into the virtual world. I have an Oculus, and I go in, and I'll talk to people. And so I go into these varying rooms, and some of them are quite hostile to the gospel message, and some of them are hostile to me personally, because I have a reputation for challenging people. And so I was in this room, and this one female, you know, avatar and all this stuff, said that she hated Trump. And I'm not saying, you know, for or against Trump, but I just said, okay, why? I just was curious. Maybe they know something I don't know. And she said, oh, because of putting people on the Supreme Court who would overturn Roe v. Wade. That was her whole reason. Okay. So that launched the conversation for us to get into, well, what's a human person? What's this? And I'm going to tell you, the room was full of people who then started attacking, over-talking, I call it dog-piling, verbal carpet bombing, not listening to reason, not having a dialogue. They were rude, condescending, insulting, were impolite, and when I would try and ask questions, they would just attack. This is what happens when they don't have a common foundation in God. They have a common foundation in paganism. Everyone does what's right in his own eyes. And that reminds me of what happened Sunday, which I didn't talk about, because I could talk about that too at the Boise Pride Fest that went on.
And I was there. What's that, a gay pride fest or something?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it was?
So, yeah. I went there with some friends on Sunday here in Boise, Idaho, and one of the buddies, he was supposed to film, but the camera wasn't working right. I have an old camera. I do need to get a new one, a DSLR, because the one I have is 12 or 15 years old. And any rate, so we missed some. He missed some of the of me doing open air preaching. Not a big deal. But what happened was we went inside this place, and it was just, it's literally across the street from the state capitol in a park. And I understood that the mayor of Boise was there. I went in. The music was so loud that I had to put earplugs in. It was incredibly loud. And, I mean, very loud. It was just wasn't me. I had my friends go, man, it's loud. It was just, you had one conversation I had with a woman, I had to get less than a foot away just to hear her because it was that loud. But anyway, so I'll just give you the synopsis. So I had conversations with people in there. Your corporations, companies, Wells Fargo was there, and Citibank was there, and the state of this and the state of that was there. And I said, hey, you know, this is a pride festival, right? And they had these, you know, flags in their booth. I said, so you pride? You have pride about this? He says, yeah. I said, well, what do you have pride about? What about this that you're proud? And they hadn't, I guess, ever been asked the question. And so they said, you know, they kind of hem and hawed. And then one person finally said, well, you know, the diversity and equity here, we're proud of that. I said, oh, okay, I think that's noble. So I'm curious, at your corporations, do you have equity for the Christians and equality and stuff for that? Do you promote their studies, their lifestyle? Do you promote that as well? And they just stared at me. And I said, because it's interesting, because what you're doing is promoting a sexual behavior, a sexual preference and sexual behavior, and that's what you're celebrating. And I think that's really interesting. And yet you don't promote, you know, Christianity, which is equality. And they're staring at me, and, well, I said, yeah, we call that hypocrisy. And I had this kind of conversation about five times at different booths. They weren't able to answer the difficult questions. People were hostile. All right. Then I went outside of the area, and there were some Christians preaching, and I joined in after about 10 minutes. And let's just say that the people that I was preaching to were yelling, screaming. One guy had a Bible, and he walked out and onto the street. They surrounded him, were yelling at him, would not let him speak. They were yelling at me, would not let me speak. They were full of anger, and I cannot even hint at what the vile things they were saying about Jesus. It was just horrible. And I kept preaching, and the foul language, the hatred, the mockery, the disdain, and they would get as close as they could. One guy started putting tried to put a sticker on me, you know, on my chest. I said, get away from me, don't touch me, you know. And I said, that's assault if you touch me, and I don't want that. That's assault. Just let you know. Don't do that. He finally backed off. People were yelling and screaming. Okay, so this is what happened Sunday, and too bad we didn't get much of that on film. Like I said, need a new camera. But at any rate, so this is what happens when people do what's right in their own eyes. Just like you said, they don't have a foundation. They don't have it in God. And they learn to hate the light. They learn to hate it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what was going on. Yeah. The light
just
shines.
Just like if God...
Go ahead,
Matt. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
It's just like the Lord convicting them and the lifestyle they're involved in is so wicked, really.
Yes.
It's really wicked. And
it was wicked.
And it's so wicked that...
Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
And that it's so wicked, they get convicted and they like go crazy, the hatred that comes from them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how, you know, I know man fell and he became bad. I don't know how exactly, but he did. Mm-hmm. Like R.C. Sproul said with evil. He said, where did it come from? He said, I don't know. But it came from somewhere. Definitely did, because it's here and it's with people too.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, man. I'm so concerned, just like you, about our country. My goodness gracious.
Well,
I think of my.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was sorry. I was just going to say that the festival was all about love and tolerance, and they showed absolutely no love and no tolerance whatsoever. The hypocrisy was so evident, and they can't see it because you don't have the right to speak. You don't have the right to have a different opinion. Only their opinion is the right one. And so they will silence you and try and stop you from speaking. This is the hypocrisy. Now, hypocrisy is a form of lying. You say one thing and do another. You're hypocritical.
Mm.
And this is what's going on more and more in this country. The foundation is gone. The foundation in Christ is gone. And everyone's doing what's right in his own eyes. And for you can just go on the web and you can do searches for assaults, and the crime rates are going up, murder rates are going up, people getting out of prison. It is as though there are people behind the scenes pulling strings to make our country as volatile as possible in order to maybe suspend the Constitution so they can gain control. And when I was talking about this in our Friday meeting with our missionaries, we have a Friday meeting at CARM a few days ago, last week, they said the same thing is happening in their respective countries. That in South America, in two different countries, they are letting the criminals out. They are punishing the people who abide by the law. Homelessness is increasing. They're attacking Christians. Crime is on the rise, and the government's not doing anything about it. And
well, it's like the devil has control. The Lord's pulling his hands off the United States and so many places on the earth. He's allowing it to happen. He's not responsible. He's allowing it to happen because it's their own choice. That's what they want. Well, they're. Unless they get saved, they're going to have their, you know, reward for eternity.
That's
okay,
right.
Matt. Thank you, Matt.
All right, man. God bless, buddy. All right, everybody. That was Chuck from North Carolina. We'll be right back after these messages. 877-207-2276. We'll be right back.
Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Everybody, welcome to the show. Welcome back. If you want to give me a call, we have four open lines, 877-207-2276. I want to hear from you. Give me a call. All right, if you want to watch the show, you want to watch me do this, it's not that big a deal. One thing you can do is see if my voice matches my face, because most people say, no, it does not. If you want to check it out, just go to carm.org, carm.org, and on the right-hand side, you'll see the Matt Slick Live. All right, so I've been playing a little bit with the lighting. I'm just curious to know what people think in the room, if they like it. All right, and give me a call, 877-207-2276. Let's get to Joe from High Point, North Carolina. Joe, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. More hanging than in there, but I'm hanging in there. So what do you got, man?
I have a question for you. My mother was in a church study group the other day, and she's 82 years old, and came back and called me up, and she said the study leader was saying that this is what he was saying, that God threw Lucifer out of heaven and did not throw him to earth. There was no earth for him to throw him to. And I've always been taught that there was an earth for him to throw him to. And I'm going, okay, that's new to me.
Yeah, we don't know. People have asked me the question before. I don't know what to tell you because I don't know when it was that Lucifer was cast out of heaven. Was it before the universe was created, or was it after the universe was created? Some say it was after, and some say it was right about the time of the fall of Adam and Eve. So, you know, I just don't know. I've looked at it, and it just says that he was cast out, but doesn't say when, doesn't give us any time markers I'm aware of. So, what that pastor or the Bible study leader said is within the logical realm of possibility, to the best of my knowledge. Doesn't mean it's true. It just means it's, you know, one of the possible options. Okay?
Okay.
But to say this is what happened, that's a problem. You know, because the Bible doesn't tell us when it happened. It tells us that it happened. So if I were teaching a Bible study and this came up, I'd say, well, one view is this, one view is that, one view, whatever. And I said, the Bible doesn't tell us. As far as I'm aware, it doesn't say when this occurred, before or after the foundation was laid of the universe. And so I just can't tell you, and I wish I could, but that's it. And I just say, here are the possibilities, and there we go. We'll find out later when we get to heaven.
Okay. Now, is that in Chronicles that when that took place, or is that where that he found this
Isaiah.
In like Isaiah?
Isaiah 14, gotcha. Yeah. And it says in Isaiah 14:12, how you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn, you have been cut down to the earth, and you have weakened the nations.
Right.
Now, we could make a case from there that that's where he was cast down to, cut down to the earth. When it came out of heaven, you've fallen from heaven, went down to earth. Okay. Is it is it literal? Maybe. You have weakened the nations, but you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven, I will raise my throne above the stars, I'll ascend the mount of the assembly, I will ascend to the heights of the clouds, I'll make myself like the Most High. Nevertheless, you'll be thrust down to Sheol. So, but it certainly, now that I'm thinking about it, certainly would seem that if this is the description of the fall of Satan, then it would be after the universe was made. That would be the implication.
Okay. All right. Well, I need to go back and read this and see what the Holy Spirit reveals to me. Well, there you go.
Well, good. I hope he does. Sure. But I would just make sure you go with the scriptures in that, okay? All right, buddy.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, Joe. God bless. Okay. All right. Four open lines. If you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Let's get to Chris from New Jersey. Chris, welcome. You are on the air.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm all right. Hanging in there, man. What do you got?
Good. I have a question about Leviticus 16, verse 14.
Leviticus 16:14. Moreover, he shall take some of the blood of the bull and sprinkle it with his finger in the mercy seat on the east side. Also in the front of the mercy seat, he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger seven times. Okay?
All right. So my question is, what was the significance of the east side be, and as opposed to the west side?
East is the rising of the sun. Also, the temple, the door that you enter into faces east. The tabernacle, it faced east. And the east is when the sun rises, and it's a symbol of God in the light. Because God said, let there be light. Jesus is the light of the world, etc. So facing the east is the rising of the sun.
Okay. Yeah, one commentary that I read, it was talking about where the people were usually gathered towards the east of the temple. Mm-hmm. So at the time of the sacrifice, there would be all the people gathered on the eastern side, and then the priest would come in as the and make the sacrifice on the behalf of the people.
Right.
Is that possible too?
Well, yeah, they'd be facing, it'd be towards the east. You ask about the east, yeah. And you know, the east of the temple, and that's where, because that's where the door would be, and the high priest would go in and move from east to west. Yeah.
Okay. And is there any significance as to why the west side was not touched?
I don't know.
Or anything like that.
I don't know. I don't think it's an issue of not being touched. I think it's just because maybe the issue of the setting of the sun in darkness, and so there's symbolism in that, and so they would want to stay on the east, not the west, because of the symbolism of being the light of God, not in the darkness, and things like that. I mean, maybe, you know, because people often take a little symbol like that and they'll make a big deal out of it, and it becomes a tradition. It becomes a practice.
Yeah, one theory that I read about was that it's a possibility that it was the western side where you know, when like Christ came and presented himself before the Father as a sacrifice, that maybe there's some significance to where that was reserved for him to either when he sits down or something, that's where the sacrifice for all time was made. I don't know.
You have to check it out.
One theory was from Ron Wyatt. Are you familiar with him?
No.
No? Well, he's one of the guys that claims to have found the Ark. And when he says he found it, again, this is just a theory.
Right.
But he claims that when he found blood on it, which was under Calvary, that it was bled on the western side as a complete picture of the sacrifice.
I mean,
I'm like, I don't believe that really, that he necessarily found it. I don't know. I don't know the man.
Right.
But I'm just wondering if there's something in Scripture that talks about the western side being reserved for the propitiation. I don't know.
I don't know. It's there's a lot of factors in that, and when you study the whole thing, it becomes very interesting. There's a lot, not just on the surface, but a lot of deep stuff there, so I'm not sure what to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
All right, buddy, there's a break.
Thank you so much.
All right, Chris, God bless, man. Thanks a lot. Hey, we have 5 open lines wide open. If you want to give me a call, all you have to do is dial 877-207-2276. We'll be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. We have nobody waiting right now. If you want to give me a call, all you have to do is dial 877-207-2276. You know, this issue of LGBTQ and what's happening, in my opinion, it's going to become even more oppressive. There's something, there's obviously a spiritual component to the idea of rebelling against God in the very nature of male-female relations that God has ordained and set up. A lot of people don't think of this in these terms, but homosexuality, LGBTQ, is an attack on the created order of God and ultimately attack on the Messiah. And the reason it is because in the Old Testament, this intensity of sexual perversion that occurred in the Old Testament would have threatened the arrival of the Messiah by threatening the coherence of the genealogy through the Messiah, that the Messiah would come in the nation of Israel. So it was in that context ultimately a demonic attack. And so people today, they are serving their flesh. They're not serving God. They are raising their own ideas of sensibility, of truth, morals, to such a level that even God himself is to be judged by them as wrong. Their arrogance is before them. Their foolishness is before them. Their pride is before them. The judgment of God is upon them. In fact, when I was doing open air out there, outside the Capitol area on Capitol Street, for those of you who might be listening know the area, I actually talked about the judgment that was on them right then and there for their denial of who God was. There were only a couple places in the open air where they actually heard, and maybe three, two and a half, this depends. One of them was when I said the judgment of God is on their hearts for they believe the lie. And you know, I saw a few people, you know, they paid attention to that. Another one was in their mockery of God, and I told them they've mocked God, and there's judgment in their hearts for that as well. And then, of course, I preached Christ crucified and risen from the dead, and it was you know, a pleasure to be able to speak that. And I had to raise my voice over the music, over the crowd yelling, and to tell them that they needed Jesus and that they needed to repent of their sins and they needed to trust in Christ, because judgment's coming and we're all going to die one day, and Jesus rose from the dead, and gave that gospel message about trusting in Him. And I'm thankful for that that ability and that privilege of being able to do that. So, in a hostile world, when the light shines in the darkness, even the smallest of light can become a harsh reality to them, and they will want to destroy it. Now, if you think about this, if there was a community of people who lived in caves, and they were, their eyes and their souls and their hearts had become accustomed to the darkness, and they're so accustomed to that darkness that if a light were to shine, it would be injurious to them, uncomfortable to them. And that's the case. That's what, see, we are called the light in the world because we represent Christ. Christ Himself is that light, but because we represent Him, when we speak the truth, the light shines upon their sin, and they hate that light, and they want to destroy the light because they prefer the darkness of their own hearts. And the judgment of God is upon them in the darkness of their own hearts, where they love evil, they seek to promote that which is ungodly, and they mock the things of God, and they condemn and mock the very sacrifice of Christ Himself by which they can be redeemed. And this is a sign of the degradation of our society, a degradation of the hearts of so many people who hate the things of God because they hate the light that shines upon their dark hearts, and they do not like what they see, so they suppress it, and in order to suppress that, they must suppress you. And that is how it works. Let's get to Jan from Richmond, Virginia. Jan, welcome. You're on the air. Jan, are you there? Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Jan.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad that you have the show and that you let somebody like me call you with a question.
Well, praise God. Okay.
So I just started a new job. I worked for these people a long time ago, and I do evaluations of how people do their jobs, and I have to lie to them about who I am and what I'm doing there and stuff.
You can't lie.
And I know, right?
So why don't lie?
It's really been bothering.
I'm sorry?
It's really been bothering me.
Yeah, because it's
started,
sin.
You know, yeah, I figured that.
Well, so I mean, are you able to?
Really,
are you able to give an example so that we can reword things so you're not lying but accomplishing the same whatever it is? Because here's an example: an old boss of mine said a phone call's coming in a half hour, and he wanted me to pick it up and tell the guy that he was not there. And I said, but no, I can't do that because it's not true. It's a lie. I won't lie for you. You know, I just said, I'm not going to lie. I will say you're not available because he wasn't available. I said, okay. He said, okay, I'll go with that. I said, fine. So there's an example of something. Okay. So.
Well, I'm not sure because I have to go into a place where I'm presumably are there to buy a big ticket item or maybe a lease or something like that. So I'm lying from the get-go.
Wait, hold on. So you're going into a store to buy something?
No, pretend to buy something and not buy it, just so I can evaluate how the people react to me, if they say the right things, if they're wearing the right clothes, if they're all these things.
So wait
they
a second.
Presentations to set by.
Well, hold on. So lying is something that occurs in the heart, all right? So if your intention is to deceive, then that's a lie. But if you're going in to evaluate how people do things, it's not a lie. It's just an evaluation.
Right, but I have to tell them I'm somebody else and that I'm here to actually be a customer.
That's a lie. Okay.
Right.
Then you need to talk to your boss and say you can't do that. You know, and you can.
Yeah, because it's the job.
So what I'll do sometimes when I want to when I don't want to use my first name, I'll use my middle name, and I use that name. And so they'll say, "What's your name?" And I'll say my name, and I go in, you know, and I'm not lying, etc. I'm not deceiving them. It is my name. So
right,
if they were saying,
I do that, but the rest of it, you know, I'm looking for a two-bedroom house. I'm looking for, I'll be moving in October, and I'm not moving anywhere.
Don't say you're if you're not. It's a lie. So you can say something
I'm sorry, what? Like I'm interested in. Maybe.
Well, you can just say things like, "I'm curious to know how this works. I'm just curious about things. I'm gathering information. I just want to know." Just tell them, you know, that's it. If I were going in, you know, in a house thing or whatever it is, you know, considering how someone so sells something, and I was there, I'm not going to lie, you know. But I, you know, I'll say I'm here. I just want to see how things work. What's going on? Should I ever want to sell or buy, I want to have information, which would be true.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I could change around to do that, probably.
Sure.
I've just had some guilt issues over it.
Good. Good,
like,
you should.
Poor people.
You should. Hey, you don't want to be deceptive, okay? But you don't have to volunteer everything either. I mean, you don't want to be deceptive out of omission. But if you want to evaluate how someone else is doing something and they ask you a question and you lie to them, you need to stop that. Okay? So there are ways to get around things. Not that you're trying to be deceptive and by not lying and you're still doing the same thing. That's not it. So if you go in and you want to see how they do things, you say, "Yeah, I just want to see how you do things." What's wrong with that?
Well, there's a lot more to it, like calling and setting appointments and all that stuff. But I think I can, with what you told me, I can take each one of those little segments and make it okay.
Yeah. And
I love the job, but I just don't like the deceit part.
Yeah, you don't want to deceive anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Okay, well, God bless Jan. All right. We have four open lines. If you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Alex from Orlando. We got a break coming up, but what do you got, buddy? Oh, there's the break.
I just finished. Okay.
There's the break. So hold on. We'll get right back to you. After, you need to take some, I think it takes some medicine. Right? We'll be right back, folks. After these messages, please stay tuned.
Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. We have four open lines. If you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Alex from Orlando. Alex, welcome, buddy.
Hey, I just finished my baking soda vitamin C Mai Tai, you know, my nightly drink.
You know, it really helps if, in addition, right before right after the fuzz is gone, is you just pour 7-Up in there with all the bubbles, and then you drink it, and then you lay down on the ground and roll.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and then my wife finds me passed out on the floor, and she calls the ambulance.
Yeah, so you get a free ride, and it's no big deal. I mean, I mean, what's the problem here? You know?
Oh, man.
And then you get some...
You're too funny.
You get some monumentous belches, and you can do that like he did in Elf. Did you hear that? Anyway. So,
yeah,
what do you got, buddy?
You go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So what do you got?
So UPCI. So I was texting you. We got to talk soon, my friend. We got to talk.
We're talking right now.
So I encounter. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, over the phone, you know?
You're not on the phone?
Okay.
All right.
I'm
okay.
Weisenheimer.
Well, you know, So what do you got?
I know, it's nothing. Yeah, okay. So I met this guy at the gym, and he does So I met this guy at the gym, and he's in the UPCI. So I got an invitation to go to his church.
Yeah, go.
Yeah, I want to go. I want to encounter it, but I want to ask your advice. Like,
just wear a wetsuit.
Like, well, you can... why do I need to wear a wetsuit?
Get a wetsuit and a crash helmet. You'll be fine. Don't worry.
So, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So he's like, yeah, you can come and worship with me. And I said, well,
no, you know,
I won't be worshiping. Yeah, I said, I won't be worshiping with you, but I'll come to attend the service. And I want to know, like, when I'm going to reach out to him, we're going to get coffee, and I'm going to go to his service. He's like, yeah, a lot of people from the headquarters will be there. But when you went to that service in Idaho, you know, how do you navigate that? Like, it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be long. Like, what's your advice regarding that?
Well, they're not out to get you. They're not violent people. They're not condemning you. You're going to find them to be quite warm and welcoming. And, you know, if you were to, you know, drop something, they'll help you pick it up. I mean, they're just normal, decent people. Okay? And you're going to find a level of exuberance that you may not be comfortable with. Not that it's right or wrong, but they tend to, let's just say, become energetic. So they can run around the church. They can jump up and down. They can shout. They can clap. They have women pastors and elders, which is definitely unbiblical. They deny the Trinity, deny who Christ truly is, what he's really done, etc. So it's a non-Christian cult. But, you know, you'll be fine. And then afterwards, just talk to them. And be careful how you talk to them. Because you don't want to be offensive, you know. You don't want to just say, oh, hey, I listened to a guy on the radio named Slick. He said it's a cult. I don't want to talk to you. It's not good advice. But you could give him vitamin C, baking soda, you know, just prep him up for your discussion with him.
Yeah. So well, we might not be on a good start. Well, because I already told the guy he was lost when I met him. I said, okay. I said, you're lost, man. And I said, I bet you think I'm lost, too. And he goes, no. He's really nice. He's like, no. I wouldn't say you're lost. We serve the same God type of thing.
No, we don't.
So, yeah, exactly. And so we're talking, and I didn't realize, do you know, I said, do you believe in the Trinity? He said, well, nowhere in the Bible is the word Trinity used. But then he goes.
So? Neither is the word atheist in the Bible, yet atheism. It's just, that's a dumb, it's like, come on. You know, I would have asked him, did you drop a barbell on your head or something? You know?
Yeah. He's very deceived. He grew up, he's third generation UPCI, so very deceived.
Yeah.
And I said, what about the Son and the Father? You know, do you think the Son was talking to himself in the garden? And he goes, yeah, I think he was. They actually think that Jesus was talking to himself in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
So
that
here's
the thing. I didn't know that.
So let me give you the pointers, okay? The key is the issue of personhood. That's it. So what you do is when you have after you go and you go to coffee, find a place where you can have a good conversation, and you want to ask him, what do you think the Trinity is? And various things. You want to get to the conversation about the person. A person, theologically, in reference to the Trinity, is what we use a term to demonstrate what we call the attributes of personhood. Self-awareness, awareness of others, being able to speak, say you, yours, me, mine. And so, say, that's what we mean by person. And he'll go, okay. And then you ask him, was Jesus a person? And he's going to have to say yes. Okay, mm-hmm. So Jesus was a person. All right, and how do we know he was a person? Because he had the attributes of humanity. He had the attributes of personhood. He could say you and yours and me and mine, and I have a will, and not my will, but your will. And I mean, that's what personhood is, right? And he'll go, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Jesus is a person. All right. So when Jesus was praying to the Father, was the person of Christ praying to the person of the Father? And this is where, just listen closely, you'll start hearing the wheels come off the cart, okay?
Okay.
Because then what they'll generally do is say that the human nature was praying to the divine nature. This is called Nestorianism. Nestorius taught the idea that in the one body of Christ are two distinct persons. Now, official UPCI statements are such that the person of Christ has two distinct natures as one person, but they're very inconsistent in how they apply that. So you have to ask them. So the person, it depends on how the conversation goes, because they're, you know, different UPCI are different. So you say, are you saying then that Jesus was one person, or was he two persons? Now they're going to have to say, you know, he was one person. And he was God and man, right? Because they'll say yes. So he was one person as God and man, right? Now, this is very important. Mm-hmm. One person as God and man. He should say yes. And how do we know he was a person? Because he said, I, you, yours, me, mine. He had a will, he could love, things like that, right? So, then who is he praying to? Because if Jesus is a person, who is he praying to? But if he's praying to himself, are you saying that Jesus is a person praying to himself? And they'll say, well, yes. So then, are you saying the human nature is praying to the divine nature? They'll say yes. Then how is he one person?
And
this is where the problem is. Okay, it's a huge problem. Now, also, if you go to carm.org, and I'm going to look for it. Let's see. Oh, boy. Oh. I'm going back. I forgot exactly where I... Oh, that's right. Luke put up a bunch of articles, so I got to go back a few more pages. And I wrote...
Luke did a good job at hosting the show the other day.
Oh, he did a great job. Yeah. I don't know if I could tell him that because his head might get bigger. But, yeah, he's a good guy. Oh, I hope he didn't hear me say that. He listened to the radio. So... No, he is a great asset to Carm. He really is. All right, so what I'm doing is looking for... let's see one more thing here. There's an article I wrote and released. I don't have to go backwards. What I want you to do, if you can, is find this article. I just got to find it. Let me just look... Because it's really going to be very
just
helpful.
Just find it. You can text it to me. Just text me the article when you find it.
The person of the Father and Jesus. Because,
sometimes here
we
it's hard
go.
To find
Oneness?
Articles on the web.
No, I found
it. Oh, you found
yeah,
it?
Okay. Oh, I got a lot, yeah. So, it's called Oneness, Jesus, and Which Nature is Talking. So just type in Which Nature is Talking. And go through that. And for example... When I had a discussion with one of my opponents, Bishop Jerry Hayes, he's a oneness guy, and he's a very polite gentleman, so I'll give him that. But I asked something like this, the pericope, John 6, 37 through 39, and I asked him various questions about it. And let's just go with verse 38 just to save time. For Jesus says, "For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." So I said, okay, now look, for I, is that divine nature or the human nature? He said, divine nature. I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, that's the human nature, he said, but the will of him who sent me, that's the divine nature. So this is evidence that they say the divine nature and the human nature communicate to each other, but that means they're two persons. And I have a definition of what, they have a definition of what personhood is also. In that article. So this is something you got to look at and you got to check out. So now here's something else. Now I want you to pay attention to this, because this is all logic. It's right there in Scripture. What I'm going to do is go to John 17:5. Now, ask him, does Jesus speak as one person, or does he speak as two persons? Because if Jesus is a person, he can only speak as one person, right? Makes sense. You ask, that's why you can say, is Jesus a person? He's going to have to say yes. If he doesn't, well, you know, he's got problems. Just put your hand on one side of his ear and then look on the, through the other ear and see if you can see any light. You know, you move your hand up and down. Because it means he doesn't.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, now this is what he says, John 17:5. Father, glorify me with the glory I had with you, which before the foundation, before the world was. How can Jesus, the person, say the I? He's going to have to say it was a divine nature. But he's speaking as a single person. Because he says, I manifested your name to the men. Who's that? That's a person of Jesus. Well then, is it divine nature talking? I have manifested in the next verse. Or is it the human nature? If it's only the human nature, then what we have is a schizophrenic view of Christ where he alternates between natures, speaking, divine nature, human nature, divine nature. You can even get it where in one sentence, the two natures are talking alternately. It just gets ludicrous. This is why you got to focus on this, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I'll follow that. Oh, really quick, too, before the show ends.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I talked about David K. Bernard, and they mm-hmm. they actually mentioned, the guy mentioned him to me, and mm-hmm. I said, yeah, my friend Matt Slick did a debate with, or wanted to debate him. And he wouldn't debate, but he might do a discussion, and yada, yada. And I told him that, and he said, yeah, but he seemed to get a little agitated when Matt started to ask him questions about what he believed in his scriptures and going to the text. And he said, oh, David's not like that. My sister works at headquarters and they know she knows the whole family. They're really nice people. So they have this guy really at a pedestal. He's on a pedestal to them. They look at him kind of like God complex for sure. Like he's the all in all.
Okay.
The top dog, UPCI.
Well, tell you what, this is one of those weird connections. Now you have this guy connection, and you tell him that Matt Slick, etc., still wants to have a discussion with him. I've emailed him, and I haven't gotten response back yet. And we're about out of time.
Okay.
You should go back tomorrow. Let me know what happens with this guy, too. Okay.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to, probably in the next couple weeks, I'm going to get together with him. But thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
All right, man. God bless. All right, that was Alex from Orlando, Florida. May the Lord bless you by his grace. We'll be back on there tomorrow, and hopefully we'll talk to you then. Have a great evening, everybody. God bless. Bye.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.